Good morning again, everyone. I'm the next presenter. My name is Francesco Di Gioia. I recently started a position at Penn State as an assistant professor of vegetable crop science, but I am from Italy, and I'm going to present a work that I did a few years ago while I was still working in Italy on the production of low potassium content microgreens to enhance the diet of patients affected by hyperkalemia. This work was done through the Association Ortinova, which is horticultural innovation, basically, and it was done in collaboration with some Italian colleagues from the University of Bari, the University of Foggia, and the National Research Council. The project was named Gusta il Biodiverso, Taste the Biodiversity, and the objective was to use wild edible species and local undraces to produce microgreens and edible flowers product. And then we had a follow-up project that allowed us to publish a book. It's an extension book about microgreens and their potential use as a novel and functional food. So briefly, what are microgreens? Microgreens are considered tender, immature greens produced from the seeds of vegetable crops, herbs, grains, and also including wild edible species. Usually they are harvested between 7 and 21 days after germination, and they are harvested when the cotyledons are fully expanded and still in full color and turgid. This is a nice picture that shows the difference between sprout, microgreens, and baby leaf. So we can consider microgreens as a relatively new category of greens, of vegetable. And I like to point in this table the difference between the three category of products. Looking at the growing cycle, there is a difference between sprout, microgreens, and baby leaf. Microgreens are kind of in the middle. The edible portion, in the case of sprouts, is everything, including the radicals, while in the case of microgreens, we only have the shoot, the top part. And in the case of the baby leaf, we have the true leaves. In terms of growing system, usually sprouts are grown soilless. Microgreens can be mostly are growing soilless, but sometimes we have seen growers producing microgreens also in the soil. And also for the baby leaf, there is both options, soil and soilless system. In terms of growing environment and nutrient requirement and also agrochemicals requirement, there is some difference between these three categories. For sure, microgreens and baby leaf are grown in need light, to some source of light to grow. For the nutrients, in the case of microgreens, there is a like possibility to not fertilize microgreens because we have some nutrient contained in the seeds, or the media itself may have some nutrient. Usually, agrochemicals are not required for sprouts and microgreens, but if we grow conventional baby leaf, we will require some agrochemicals. And then, in terms of harvest age, microgreens are harvested at the fully expanded cotyledons or at the appearance of the first true leaves. And this is one thing that is very interesting is sprouts are harvested without any cut because, like we said, we collect everything. In the case of microgreens, one interesting advantage versus the baby leaf is that we have two options. We can treat them as a fresh cut product or we can sell them like in the growing media while they are still growing. In the last 20 years, microgreens are becoming very, very popular. And the reason, like, the question is why they are so popular. Chef, restaurant, and the food industry is always looking for something new for innovation and also for products that have, like, that can improve the aesthetical quality of the food that we have. So microgreens is something that we can use as a garnish green and, you know, it will add color, flavor, texture, different texture. even to simple dishes like this caprese here. So here are a few pictures of greens that really have bright color. Some of them are very intense flavor. Some are spicy, some have a pungent spicy flavor. Some are sweet, like pea shoot. And, you know, chefs like to use these to create new things. And this is, for example, a chef we were working with that developed this watermelon bruschetta using microgreens and edible flowers. And it was like a cooking show in the street. This is also a place where you want to be in Italy one time at least. And he will do all kind of sandwich using microgreens and edible flowers. Just to give you an example, you know, people are preparing appetizer, first dish, second dish, a lot of different things, and also trying combinations that are really interesting and new. For example, this is strawberries with micro basil. Now, microgreens are becoming so popular also because the traits that the property that they have really match with the needs, the requirement of the modern consumer, which also are looking for novel food and, you know, for aesthetical quality. And we know that modern consumers are also more health conscious, and so they are looking for highly nutritious food, rich of bioactive compounds, and also possibly organic certified, pesticide-free, locally produced. And so microgreens kind of cover all these. In fact, you can see here like microgreens produced in an old bomb shelter in the center of London, underground London. Microgreens can be used also to promote, to evaluate local land races or wild species, like you see here. And we know that microgreens, from the literature, are a rich source of bioactive compounds, several bioactive compounds, especially vitamins, sometimes several times higher in microgreens than in standard vegetable. And like in this case of the red cabbage, six times higher vitamin C compared to the standard red cabbage. Microgreens are also a good source of minerals, especially potassium and calcium. So if we look at the evolution of the concept of food quality, microgreens can offer a lot of different things. And one aspect, so there is a constant evolution of the concept of food quality and the demand of product from consumer. And one of the things we see is that a higher number of people has particular dietary needs. There is an increasing number of people, for example, that have are affected by this hyperkalemia, which is basically an excess of potassium in the blood. And this is a life-threatening, potentially life-threatening clinical condition that is affected, is usually associated with chronic kidney disease. And chronic kidney disease is also associated with diabetes, with cardiovascular disease, hypertension. And usually this problem occurs when the organism has impaired capacity to excrete potassium or to control the distribution of potassium between intra and extracellular compartments. Why is this important? Patients affected by hyperkalemia need to reduce their daily intake of potassium, usually to no more than 1,500 to 2,000 milligrams per day, so 1.5 to 2 grams per day. They must therefore limit the consumption of fruit and vegetables that are rich of a rich source of potassium. And many times to be able to eat vegetable, they need to boil the vegetable even several times in a large quantity of water so that they leach basically the potassium. But this also lead to a consistent reduction of the content of vitamin and bioactive compounds. So also these people have to integrate their diet to get these vitamins and bioactive compounds. So Considering the fact that microgreens have a short cycle, don't need a lot of nutrients, and can be grown hydroponically, so controlling the nutrient solution, which gives the possibility to control the nutrient solution pretty well, we had a question. Can we produce low-potassium microgreens to improve the diet of these people and the quality of life of these people? So we designed an experiment with three different species. Actually, we did two experiments. So we consider six species, but I'm going to present just the results of three, the first experiment. And so we work with broccoli, brassica wrap or rapini, red cabbage, and we use the open cycle soilless system, sub-irrigation soilless system, using fiber pots as a growing media, and we apply three different nutrient solutions. Our reference, our standard was the half-strength Oglot solution, so potassium was 3 millimoles or 117 ppm. And then we reduced the concentration of potassium to 25% and to no potassium, so we had these three levels. So we seeded the greens on the pods, and 2 days after germination, we start applying the nutrient solution. You have here like a view of the greens after the germination, and the solution was distributed with the auto-compensating drippers. This is a view of the trial, and 12 days after, we harvest the microgreens, and we measure, of course, the yield, fresh and dry weight, the mean shoot fresh weight, the dry matter content, the mineral concentration, and antioxidant capacity and total phenols. Here in this table, you can see that the shoot fresh weight, the yield, was reduced only with no potassium, versus while reducing 25% to 25%, the rate of potassium didn't decrease yield. However, the mean shoot fresh weight was reduced with reducing the level of potassium. And one thing that was interesting is that the dry weight increased with reducing the level of potassium. There were some differences between the species, and red cabbage seemed to like produce more, had higher yield, and also higher mean shoot fresh weight. But had the lowest dry matter content. The difference in terms of yield was mainly determined by a difference in the height of the shoots. So there was an effect there. So you can see in this picture the difference. And when we applied when no potassium was provided, especially in the red cabbage, we saw some symptoms of deficiency, but those were not visible in the when we used 25% of the potassium rate. So we were able to reduce the potassium content in the reducing the level of potassium applied through the nutrient solution up to 82%. With no potassium, and around 49 and 59% with 25% of potassium. We had a slight increase of sodium when we reduced the potassium, but there was a significant interaction between potassium level and species. So here you could see the level. And basically, with the level of potassium, the content of potassium achieved with the lower level of potassium, we like consuming 100 grams of greens. Basically, we could potentially supply between 8.7% of the recommended daily intake of potassium for patients that are affected by hyperkalemia. Here is the graph with the increase of sodium only for red cabbage and a little bit also for broccoli, but not for brassica wrap. And what we saw also is that reducing the level of potassium, we increased the content of phenols and also especially the hydrophilic and total antioxidant capacity. In conclusion, we can say that it's possible to produce brassicas, low potassium microgreens, to enhance the diet of patients affected by hyperkalemia, and fertigation with 25% of potassium showed the best trade-off between production and reduction of potassium, and also in terms of improving the dry matter content and the total phenols and antioxidant capacity. Thank you for your attention, and if you have questions, if there is time. Just a couple of minutes. Yes, please.
So, have you gone more another step, like with the marketing? Because if I was one of those patients, I'm not sure I would trust you if there's low potassium. So how do you get across that hurdle?
Yeah, that is something we thought about, how you, if you can guarantee the level of potassium in this vegetable. I think it can be done if you really have everything under control. You can guarantee that because we have repeated those tests, it's pretty consistent. If you don't apply or you apply a specific level of potassium, you can guess the range you are in. And yes, anyway, like those patients have to be careful. It's not just greens that contribute to potassium in their diet. But yes, that is something that if someone wants to develop this commercial level, which I hope has to, you know, think about how to guarantee the level.